Championship Barbecue begins with the rub. And if you want Championship Barbecue at home, try Caroline's Rubs. Caroline's Rubs are used by restaurants, championship competition teams, and commercial operations. And you can use them to make better beef, pork, turkey, and chicken, seafood, vegetables, and game. Caroline's Gourmet Dry Rubs, hickory smoked salt, and seasonings are all natural and contain no flavorings, MSG, or anti-clumping agents. Visit carolinesrub.com and order the Sweet Maple Rub, the Aussie Steak Rub, the Texas Chili Seasoning, an award-winning blend of Tex-Mex flavors, the Hickory Smoked Sea Salt, or design your own dry rub kit with any four of your choices. And get this, Caroline's Rubs are so sure you'll love their special flavors, they even offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Your money back if you don't like Caroline's Rubs. And there's free airmail delivery on any order to the U.S. and Canada. Call Caroline's Rubs toll-free, 866-827-1085. That's 866-827-1085. Or visit carolinesrub.com.
Hi, this is Larry Wolf of Wolf Rub Barbecue Seasonings, and you're listening to Barbecue Central.
Coming up next on the Barbecue Central Show.
You'll notice that the building beside our restaurant has smokestacks coming out of it. And it's a coffee shop now. And I assure you that the coffee shop is not brewing coffee in our old pits. That's what the restaurant used to be.
Welcome to Barbecue Central, the show where we talk about all things important to the world of barbecue. From big-named interviews to advice on cooking brisket and ribs, you'll find it all right here inside Barbecue Central. If you're interested in learning more about barbecue, feel free to visit our website at www.bbq-4-the-u.com. Get connected to the best barbecue forum on the internet. And now, here's your program host, Greg Rempe.
Thank you, Jim Morgan, and welcome to Barbecue Central, the show where we talk about all things important to the world of barbecue. Wherever you are across the globe, I certainly appreciate you taking time out to join me. My guest tonight is Chris Lilly. Chris is well known for being part of Big Bob Gibson's restaurant in Decatur, Alabama. He's one of the creators of the Barbecue Challenge series that was originally on OLN and now has moved to the Versus Network. And Chris has also made a number of TV appearances himself, to include the Today Show, and he's taking time out of his busy schedule to talk to me tonight. Chris, welcome to Barbecue Central.
Greg, I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, thanks for being thrilled. Chris, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. I've been doing this barbecue thing since 1991, a long time. I work at Big Bob Gibson Barbecue in Decatur, Alabama. We have two locations. Big Bob Gibson has been in business since 1925, over 80 years of smoking that good barbecue. So when I got in, you know, they had a long time, a big base of doing it right. So I learned under the tutelage of a man who trained under Big Bob Gibson. So I feel honored to have learned under somebody Big Bob took under his wing, and he helped me out, and here I am today.
Do you have any first recollections of barbecue?
I've always been a barbecue fan. My dad was a huge barbecue fan. As a matter of fact, he grew up in Memphis, went to college at Georgia Tech. The route he took from Memphis to Georgia Tech took him through Decatur. So he has fond memories of stopping off at Big Bob Gibson's restaurant on the way to and from college. So he was a big barbecue fan growing up, which made us, his children, big barbecue fans. And, you know, something we look forward to on the weekends, and it was something special that we could go out and do. So I have fond memories on Saturdays and Sunday going to the nearest barbecue shack with my dad and enjoying the good stuff.
Obviously, you're a big part of Big Bob Gibson's restaurant. You go on the website and you can, you know, read quite a bit of history on it. Bob himself seems to have been quite an ebullient character, big in stature, big in personality. Can you give us a little background about him?
Sure can. He was a railroad worker. He just barbecued as a hobby, like many of us, you know, who got into barbecue, just doing it as a hobby on the weekends. And his barbecuing on the weekends led to more and more people showing up, demanding more and more of his time. And the weekend friends coming over quickly turned into a weekend business. And finally, his friends and family and customers pushed him into getting out of the railroad business and going into barbecue full time. So that was in 1925. and he opened up restaurants all across Decatur. He moved it around a little bit. When he first opened, all he served was chicken with his original white sauce and pulled pork and coleslaw. That's what he did. Those were his specialties.
1987, the store branched out into the catering side of things. How did that affect the business overall?
Well, Decatur is a town that is right on the interstate, right on the river. So we have a huge amount of industry, 3M, Boeing, General Motors, Saginaw, Wolverine, on and on and on. So it was a market for it. There's a huge market for catering. All these companies wanting to do company picnics, wanting lunches, business meetings. So we saw the market and thought that barbecue was definitely an excellent item to cater. It was already done, and you could, on the spur of the moment, book a job and take the bulk food out and make people happy. So it was a good investment for the business to proceed that route. That actually pushed us into getting our first trailer barbecue pit. Once we got that, it turned into, to promote the catering that we did, it turned into us entering a contest, and then we were sure enough hooked.
Can you tell us about the white sauce that Big Bob Gibson has become so famous for?
Big Bob's, I guess his second sauce that he ever did was his original white sauce. It was first made as a poultry sauce for his chickens, his whole split chickens. Right off the pit, he would dip them in a vat of that tangy white sauce. And that was one of the things that made him famous or put him on the map. The people that would taste it as customers were, it's so original that, it's a talking point. But it's not only something to talk about, it's really good stuff. It's, that it's really a tangy, peppery flavor. When somebody asks me what's in it, I always tell them it's a vinegar-based sauce. But I think most people know now it has a little mayonnaise in there to turn it white.
Is the recipe itself one of those closely guarded, family type deals?
It definitely is. The white sauce recipe is closely guarded. Although there are a lot of locals here that that know it or have versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you really tried hard enough, I think you could you could guess the ingredients.
Not to be outdone by the white sauce, coupled with the fact that the commercial red sauce you were using wasn't up to snuff, you and Don McLemore set out to develop your own red sauce. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, when I got into business with Don and with Big Bob Gibson Barbecue, that was one thing I was not satisfied with, our table red sauce, our sweet tomato-based sauce. We just used a commercial sauce. To be honest with you, it wasn't that impressive. It wasn't that original. I felt it was doing detriment to the quality barbecue that we pulled off the cooker. So we decided we wanted to make our own signature sauce. So Don would make a recipe, send me a sample of the recipe and the ingredients. And when I bettered that sauce, I would send a sample and a recipe back to him. And we traded that back and forth for about a year, year and a half. And then it came up on Memphis in May, and we had to turn in a sauce. And we mixed our two best recipes together, his recipe and mine, and we won Memphis in May with our sauce. First year we entered it, and we decided we had to bottle that specific sauce.
Back in the old days, there were the big brick, chimney cookers and the clay floors. Is any of that existing today, whether it be in real working conditions or just for more of a historical perspective?
If you go to our main restaurant location on 6th Avenue in Decatur and look at the building beside our restaurant as it is today, you'll notice that the building beside our restaurant has smokestacks coming out of it. And it's a coffee shop now. And I assure you that the coffee shop is not brewing coffee in our old pits. That's where the restaurant used to be. Those particular pits in the back, they have not been used in years and years. But those are examples of two of the type pits that Big Bob used. They had clay or dirt floors. And he would cook the chickens or pork and ribs in the big brick pits with the dirt floors. And once a week, they would shovel all of the dirt out that the grease had just saturated, and they'd fill it back up with the clay dirt. And this was a process that they did every week at Big Bob Gibson's.
Are there plans to open other Big Bob Gibson locations or perhaps even franchise?
Well, as a matter of fact, we are opening our first franchise location in Monroe, North Carolina. That's just in the suburbs of Charlotte, North Carolina. It opens this month, March 26, 2007, and that will be our first, hopefully, of many. It's a restaurant. It's going to be named Big Bob Gibson Barbecue, but we've expanded the menu some. We're not only doing fantastic barbecue, but we've opened up a whole line of menu items that come straight off the grill. Add a few appetizers, and there you have it, a new Big Bob Gibson concept that we are looking to franchise.
What kind of pits do you use in the restaurant now?
We've got several different types of pits, or at least two different types of pits. We've got the old-fashioned brick pits with the metal lids, chimneys on both sides to bleed smoke across. We use indirect heat with 100% hickory logs. And we'll also use Southern Pride cookers also for all of our overnight cooking.
Going to kind of switch gears out of the restaurant side here and get into more competition. When did you get into competitions?
Our first competition was that's a long time ago. I think we entered our first competition in 96 or 97, and we did it as an afterthought after we had this commercial unit that we were cooking on, for company picnics. Let's see, our first competition, I think I came in like fourth place in pork. And our second competition was in Demopolis, Alabama, and we won the automatic to go to Memphis in May and compete in the world championship. And that, it was our second contest that hooked us on this barbecue. Because Memphis in May was something that we knew about and we had seen and heard about, but we never dreamed we'd ever be there cooking.
How many different barbecue sanctioning bodies are you competing under during the course of a year?
I tell you, I'm not competing as much now as I used to. Well, I think last year we did four competitions. But back when I was competing a lot, I think I was doing probably about eight competitions a year. But I intentionally did as many different type contests as possible. I was not exclusively a Memphis in May team or KCBS team. I've cooked, of course, Memphis in May's. I've cooked Kansas City's. I've cooked at the Houston Livestock and Rodeo Show, which I believe the rules closely mirror the IBCA rules. I've done the Best of the Best, the National Barbecue Festival. They use a completely different set of rules. Really, I'm open to anything, and I look forward to competing with, against anybody, with any type of rules. It's just more fun that way, whether it's blind or whether it's on site. I like to be challenged, I think the only way to be challenged nowadays is just, and the only way to look for something different is to, just go out and do all types of contests.
Having experience in a lot of different sanctioning bodies, is there one that you prefer over the other?
I don't really have a preference. There's no perfect scoring system, and there's no perfect way to be judged. I think there's good and bad points to every type of judging system. I love the aspect of, Memphis in May when the judges come and judge on site. One thing I like about that particular scoring is you're guaranteed at the end of the contest to be keep competing head-to-head against the three top teams in each category. Whereas Kansas City, you might not necessarily be competing head-to-head against the best teams there. It all depends on what table you land on. But I absolutely love the aspect of KCBS and that everything is fair and there's no preconceived notions on what team is better than the other. It's all blind and fair scoring system. I like them all.
I don't know what to say. Do you think it's odd that in some competitions you have to do a whole dog and pony show where the judges are actually coming to your booth? And perhaps you're actually being scored down if your presentation isn't good enough, when in reality your barbecue might be better than anybody else's out there.
Well, I guess when I think of barbecue, to me barbecue is more than just the meat on the platter, the meat on the plate, or service off the grill. Barbecue is really what happens while the meat is on the grill. It's really the time and the environment that envelop the process. So barbecue to me is more than just the food. It's what you do while the food's on the grill and how it gets from the raw state to the done state. So by not going on site, I think you really miss some of what barbecue is, if that makes any sense whatsoever. Now, as far as judging and how that matters, to a good judge, it shouldn't matter. I mean, the best barbecue is the best barbecue, whether it comes off a $50 Weber, if it comes off a $15,000 rig. It really should not matter.
A quick review of your website shows you've won a number of awards. Does one stand out in particular over the others?
You know, I guess the first grand championship or the first victory, especially that first Memphis in May grand championship, probably stands out as is one of the accomplishments that just thrilled me the most. Also, I would probably say the win at the American Royal was really exciting for us also. Also, myself, I went to Jamaica with my wife, and we did the Jamaican Jerk, Southern Jerk barbecue contest down there. So it was really special being down there with her and just sharing that with her, because it was just me and her, and that was really the first contest that she had gone and, you know, cooked side by side with me, so that was special also.
What do you cook on?
In competitions, I cook on three Jed Master units. I've got a trailer that holds a 4-foot by 6-foot unit and a 3-foot by 5-foot unit. And then at times, depending on what I'm cooking in a contest, I've got a little backyard rotisserie Jed Master unit that I use. Typically in competition, I'll cook my ribs and my chicken on the small backyard unit. And I'll fire up one of my trailer units to cook my pork and beef if I'm doing KCBS. Memphis in May, I just fire up one of my trailer units to cook shoulder.
Is there any reason in particular that you went with the Jedmaster versus the other pits that are out there?
Keep in mind, when we first bought our trailer unit, it was not for competition. It was for catering, and we were looking for a impressive-looking unit so we could take out to a company picnic. You know, at Boeing or one of the factories around here, and look sharp and put out good food. That was our only concerns. When we started entering the contest, we found out fairly quickly that the Jedmaster unit was also a good unit to compete with. So, again, that was not our first intention when we bought the unit.
What are your thoughts about a moist cooking environment versus a dry one?
I'm a huge fan of humidity when it comes to barbecuing. I think it is very, very necessary to have a high humidity in your cooking chamber. Whether that be that humidity come from added humidity, you know, water, apple juice, whatever you want to put in the bottom of the cooker, or my particular style calls for trapping the natural moisture from the product into the cooking chamber by choking down the dampers and only giving the fire enough oxygen to barely burn, keeping a low enough temperature and, you know, trapping the natural humidity in there.
Do you inject in competitions?
I inject my pork in competitions. I do not inject ribs, do not inject beef, do not inject chicken. Not that it's wrong or right, but it's just my particular style.
Well, I've seen you on television inject pork shoulders. Are you like one of the last bastion of competitors that aren't doing anything with beef?
That's interesting. You hear so many tales of people, you know, working with nitrates and phosphates and stuff, you know, whether it would be with pork or beef or poultry. No, I think there's still a fair amount of people out there that just like a nice dry rub, put it on the cooker and let it go. Some of the products out there that you see today, I think, you know, might do more harm than good, you know, as far as flavor goes. But, again, that's just me. There's no right or wrong way to do beef. It's just only what works best for you. And for me, a dry rub and put it on the cooker. Now, I generally will wrap my beef. I usually bring my beef up to about 160 and wrap it, unless the color's not there. And then I'll let it go on to 170, 175 until it gets that perfect color before I wrap. But as far as any additives, other than a dry rub or a wet rub, not on my beef.
keeping within the beef realm at the moment, you said you do foil it when you, once you reach a proper internal temperature, assuming the color's right. One of the bigger debates on any barbecue form you go on to is cooking brisket fat side up or fat side down. Where do you weigh in on that?
Starting with foil, the only reason I use foil on the beef is to collect a little au jus in the bottom of the foil so I can use that at the end of my process. Otherwise, I think I would leave it bareback on the shelf the whole time. Fat side up or fat side down? I start my beef off fat side up, but when I wrap it, I'll flip it over and go fat side down, flat up. And the reason being is the au jus and the drippings and the extra fat that gets on the bottom, I do not want to wash the color away from the beef or out of the beef that I worked so hard to put on it. So I will protect the bark by putting the bark up out of the juice and out of the fat the second part of cooking. Right or wrong, who knows? But that's just my style.
I was going to say, the people I've talked to that are in the competitions fairly heavily, more recognizable names, do it exactly the opposite.
And do it the opposite?
It's
oh, my goodness.
Fat side down, well, and then they wrap it with the fat side up in order to soften the bark if it were to get too crispy. And only one of the other three were actually wrapping during the cooking process.
Oh, really? So they want to soften the bark. Okay. That sounds like they're cooking a little bit drier than I normally cook. So you're talking about are you talking about low humidity cooks?
Right.
I don't know.
it never ceases to amaze me how many different ways people do things.
That's what makes barbecue like so great, though. If there was one way to cook brisket, if there was one way to cook pork, we sure wouldn't be on the telephone tonight talking about it.
Right.
It makes it a whole lot more interesting. People sitting around arguing over the best way to cook. And that's what's fascinating about barbecue. It's just there's no one way to do it. It's your particular style, and a lot depends on what's your personal preference or even where you grew up. And I think that's the most important thing because what you grew up on, that is barbecue to you. And that's where I think you form your taste.
When you're cooking the brisket with the fat side up, are you under the impression that the fat is working through the beef itself and coming out of the backside of the meat?
That sounds like magic to me. But I don't think that works like that in my cooker. It might yours, but now I can see the fat rendering over and around,
right.
But I don't think my fat is working through my brisket flat. But somebody's welcome to call me up and prove me wrong on that one.
I think the science proves that that doesn't really happen. Are you just a flat cooker in competitions, or are you a whole packer guy?
I'm a whole packer guy. I cook the whole brisket. I sure do. And I do very little trimming also. Probably a lot less than the... I do a lot less trimming on my pork and my brisket than your average guy.
Do you trim the point off of the flat before you cook?
No. I cook the whole brisket point and flat together.
In your opinion, new teams get into the competition circuit. What do you think some of the biggest mistakes that are made right off the bat?
Oh, I know the answer to that one.
Glad I asked.
Somebody new coming on the circuit, or somebody new cooking barbecue especially, what happens is there's so much information out there on injections, on marinades and rubs, on brines. They take all of this in and they try to do everything at once. And they try to find that magic thing that is going to just make them go straight to the top. And you know what they don't do? They don't learn how to cook barbecue. They jump to all these flavorings and seasonings before they learn how to actually cook the barbecue. And that's the most important thing. You can learn how to cook barbecue right and use salt and pepper and win contests. I tell you, I mean, it's just it's crazy some of the things the folks put on this fork and the beef, you know, thinking it's the magic thing that's going to put them over the top. But the most important thing is learning how to cook, learning when your beef is done, learning when your pork is done, learning how not to overcook your chickens. People can skip that and go straight to flavor.
In your opinion, what separates the teams who win consistently week after week versus the teams that don't?
The people that win week in and week out are the absolute most consistent cooks on the circuit. And when I mean consistent, I mean that they cook their meat and pull it when it's perfectly done and serve it when it's perfectly done. That's the most important factor. Once you know how to cook, and once you can, every time you cook, make sure your meat is perfect, then you can start worrying about judges' flavor profiles. That's the last thing you need to worry about. First of all is consistency in cooking, and then second is consistency in flavor.
We're going to switch gears again out of the competition side and get into more of the TV viewing stuff.
Sure.
A very popular TV show for us barbecue heads was the Barbecue Challenge series on the Versus Network. Was this your idea?
The Barbecue Championship series was born out of the All-Star Barbecue Showdown, which came on OLM the season before. That was initially my idea. What happened was, and this is a story within itself, and it's sort of a wacky story. I was cooking the Big Apple Barbecue Block Party and was checking my cooker temperature probably about 3:30 or 4 in the morning, and ran into a man by the name of John Marcus, who's a television writer that was so intrigued about barbecue, he had volunteered to help Paul Kirk cook his brisket at the Big Apple Barbecue Block Party. And we struck up a conversation at 4 in the morning. And from that conversation, he visited Decatur, Alabama, visited the restaurant, and while he was here, I pitched him the idea of a show. He loved it, and between the two of us, we took that idea and discussed it and turned it into a plan. And really, together, myself and John developed the concept of the Barbecue Championship Series, or first of all, the All-Star Barbecue Showdown.
How long does it take from original pitch to actually getting it on set and taping?
From the time myself and John had our first conversation to the end of the first, we were through shooting and wrapping the whole series within a year span. And that's actually pretty quick in television. From the initial idea, from the initial concept, to when we shot our last show. Because if you remember, our last show of the All-Star Barbecue Showdown was shot in New York at the Big Apple Barbecue Block Party a year later. We initially went and pitched this, and we had, I believe, four networks interested. We had Outdoor Life Network, CMT, Game Show Network, and Spike. Our first pitch was to Outdoor Life Network, and they didn't want us to go any further. They loved the concept, loved the idea, and bought the show.
Talked to a number of people that actually competed in the last series. What's the selection process to getting on that show? I'm not asking for an invite. I'm just wondering.
The selection process for the Barbecue Championship Series. I think last year we went to four or five contests and did filmed different chefs, different personalities, and used those as a way to gauge talent. We also put the word out on several of the forums and in trade papers, asking people to send in tapes. And from those tapes and from the filming at those contests, we selected our competitors. We looked for the champions or for the all-stars. We looked at credentials first and personality second. We definitely wanted the big name credentials, but we also wanted somebody who would show well on television. We had a lot of people. We had a good cast, but we had a lot of really good applications that didn't make it. Also, for the wild cards, we looked less at credentials and probably more at personality. Within the decision making process, of course, it was myself and John. But it was also the production company and also the network, and the network did have a lot of input on that also.
I had a couple people on my message board ask me to ask you. They said that the first edition that was on OLN seemed to be a little bit more geared towards the cooking side of it, and then last season had a little bit more fluff pieces and kind of took away from the actual cooking part of it. You going to look to retool anything and make it more geared towards the cooking, or you think you have a winning format right now?
Well, your viewers and readers would probably be right. Now, they have much the same opinions as we do. I'm a barbecue guy, and they certainly are too. And, you know, when I look at a show, I can look, even my own show, I can look at it critically and tell you what I like and what I don't like about the first and second series. I think the first series was it was folksy. It was you know, deep rooted in barbecue, and that aspect I liked. I think the production value of the second show was a lot better than the first show, but I thought it was much too fast. It was at a fast pace and didn't slow down enough to really go into depth about how these guys were cooking their pork and brisket and poultry and eel. So if we do it again this year, which it looks like there's a really good chance we will, I'd like the third show to come down somewhere in between the two. And plus, we have a lot of other ideas, you know, possibly analysts on the show, you know, talking about what the guys are doing and why. Basically, I want a show that we can all sit down and watch and enjoy, but at the same time, learn, whether it be a veteran barbecue or somebody looking at this show for the first time. Because, you know, it's all about barbecue, and it's all about promotion of barbecue. That's what I'd like to see it go.
Well, if you're looking for a color guy, I certainly have the voice experience. However, I have no competitive barbecue experience under my belt.
That might be a good thing.
Just in case. Exposing barbecue on that kind of stage certainly shows the growing popularity, especially of competition barbecue. Aside from the Barbecue Challenge series, are there other barbecue shows out there that you're looking to pitch or you're getting the can?
You know, I would love to say that because I've enjoyed my time in television, and especially with the barbecue series, I've enjoyed it a whole lot. And I'd love to say I had, you know, a couple more shows on the back burner that I'm working at. But honestly, I don't, and it's a time thing with, you know, with the franchising and you know, in catering and the, you know, traveling that I'm doing nowadays. It's just one of those time things. And where can you focus your time, you know, without getting spread too thin? I think one show for me is definitely enough right now. But I would love to see more barbecue shows on the air, absolutely.
We're going to see you on the television doing a, like a barbecue university type deal?
That's new to me. Is that the rumor?
No, just asking. Chris Lilly is involved with Big Bob Gibson's Restaurant. He's a TV visionary for barbecue. Chris, I certainly appreciate you taking time out to talk to me a little bit tonight about Big Bob Gibson's, about competition, and about the TV stuff. So if there's something that comes up in the future you'd like to get on and talk about, be certainly more than happy to have you.
Greg, I appreciate the opportunity. Anytime I can talk about barbecue is always a good time for me. So we'll just see what the comments are about this particular podcast. I may have to come on for rebuttal.
We'll have you on for a roundtable, and we can talk about how to do stuff, and you can argue with other people.
Hey, that sounds fun to me.
All right, we'll book it.
Make sure Dr. Barbecue's on that roundtable also, because you know, I have to disagree with him on a lot of his points.
I'll make that happen for sure.
I'm kidding. He's a good friend of mine.
All right, Chris.
Take care, my friend.
You too.
Bye.
Quick thanks again to Chris Lilly for taking time out to talk to me tonight. In case you're wondering where Chris might be over the next few months, might try on March 26th at the grand opening of Big Bob Gibson's Barbecue, Monroe, North Carolina, May 17th through 19th at the Memphis and May World Championship Barbecue Cookoff in Memphis, Tennessee, June 9th and 10th at the Big Apple Barbecue Block Party, New York, New York, June 27th through the 29th, the California Barbecue Association Cooking Class in Los Angeles, California. August 4th and 5th at Segesio Vineyard, Healdsburg, California. September 21st and 22nd, Decatur Riverfest Cookoff in Decatur, Alabama. And October 5th and 6th, the American Royal in Kansas City. If you'd like more information on Big Bob Gibson's restaurants, you can visit them on the web at bigbobgibson.com. Stay tuned for the Caroline's Rub Spot on the Backside Jones. For Barbecue Central, this is your program host, Greg Rempe, saying so long, everybody.
Championship barbecue begins with the rub. And if you want championship barbecue at home, try Caroline's Rubs. Caroline's Rubs are used by restaurants, championship competition teams, and commercial operations. And you can use them to make better beef, pork, turkey, and chicken, seafood, vegetables, and game. Caroline's Gourmet Dry Rubs, hickory smoked salt, and seasonings are all natural and contain no flavorings, MSG, or anti-clumping agents. Visit carolinesrub.com and order the Sweet Maple Rub, the Aussie Steak Rub, the Texas Chili Seasoning, an award-winning blend of Tex-Mex flavors, the hickory smoked sea salt, or design your own dry rub kit with any four of your choices. And get this, Caroline's Rubs are so sure you'll love their special flavors, they even offer a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Your money back if you don't like Caroline's Rubs. And there's free airmail delivery on any order to the U.S. and Canada. Call Caroline's Rubs toll-free, 866-827-1085. That's 866-827-1085. Or visit carolinesrub.com.